This is very important that we keep the full energy and the full concentration for all presentation. Now I'm very honored to welcome you, Léo. Léo wrote two books on the history of the Red Cross. Congratulations. It means that there will be a third one, I believe.
No,
yes, there will be one. And Léo will use a PowerPoint presentation, and his contribution will be le docteur Basting, avocat du livre aux Pays-Bas. Léo est un historien de médecine et professeur à Leiden University.
No, it's not the university,
it's
related to the university.
Okay. Yeah. So, Léo, you have the floor.
Thank you. Also, a few remarks before. As you see, it's not specifically on Basting. Basting, of course, will play a role in my talk, but it's not specifically on Basting. Secondly, I was ordered to talk for 20 minutes, but I am also ordered to talk very slowly. So maybe the 20 minutes barrier will be
30.
will be taken. Dear ladies and gentlemen, before going into the troublesome erection of the Dutch Red Cross, I want to thank Monsieur Durand for inviting me here to this interesting conference. I said troublesome erection. This can be exemplified by pointing out that if I had restricted myself to the reception of Dunant's Un Souvenir de Solferino, I could make this perhaps the shortest lecture ever, simply by stating, with the exception of some private congratulations, such as, according to Basting, from the royal family, there wasn't any reception. At least not in public newspapers. Furthermore, the troublesome nature is seen in the fact that the Dutch Red Cross was not a result of private initiative, such as elsewhere, but of a royal decision by the conservative, militaristic King William III, nicknamed King Gorilla, and not because of his looks. This happened after a whisper of his Minister of War. This does not mean the Netherlands played a minor role in the first years of the Red Cross history. Dunant had two dear Dutch friends, Johan Hendrik Christian Basting and his friend Charles William Meredith van der Velde, member of the first local Geneva committee, who strove side by side with him to make his idea of voluntary aid to sick and wounded soldiers a success. It is even said that Basting should be called the father, or at least the co-father, of Red Cross neutrality for medical personnel and wounded alike, and that it was his wife who came up with the sign of a Red Cross on a white field. Nevertheless, it took 4 years before in the Netherlands a Red Cross organization came into being, officially called Dutch Society for the Lending of Aid to Sick and Wounded Warriors in Times of War. As said, in spite of different attempts, Basting nor van der Velde had anything to do with it. This, although even nowadays, Basting is often called the founder of the Dutch Red Cross. But as you probably all know too well, few subjects are so riddled with myth as exactly the first years of the Red Cross history. By the way, the words "in times of war," in the official name of the Dutch Red Cross, would bring the organization in big trouble, because, in spite of short-time exceptions such as the Franco-Prussian and the Boer War, to which ambulances were sent, it meant invisibility in the decades of peace, at least in Europe, up until 1914. In fact, the Dutch Red Cross would not gain popularity of some substance before the 1950s. Soon Basting set himself to translating Dunant's book, probably on the request of Dunant himself, although the original French language could hardly have had anything to do with the poor reception, being a familiar language for almost all Dutch having had some education. You see There has been lots of changes in Dutch education for over a century. It was Basting's translation that did cause some reaction, although all in all, it still was but a mere stone in a vast sea. Under the title Solferino, The Voice of Humanity on the Field of Battle, extended by Basting himself in the form of a preface and an afterword, the translation appeared on the 19th of June, 1863. The next day, for instance, the General Trade Journal wrote it had no doubt their fellow countrymen would join our royal family in their recognition of the great work of Dunant. Even those, and now I quote, who regard the idea as a utopia will not withhold him their approval. We even think that amongst those who will join him in September this year to speak on this subject at the Great Conference of Societies for General Use will be many a Dutchman. 2 days later, the New Rotterdam Journal was a bit more cheery with its words. Because the royal family apparently had given its approval, I quote, we think we may put the attention on this booklet of those interested in the subject. After this, it was silent for some weeks in Dutch newspapers. On the 6th of July, however, the General Journal broke the silence with the publication of an article by one of its readers on the question if and how the ideas of Dunant could be made applicable to the sea forces. But besides from this, it was not before the statistical conference at Berlin the Dutch would again hear of Dunant. Of course, especially pointing at the fact that Dutchman Basting, one of the two Dutch representatives, was invited to cooperate in Section 4 in which Dunant's ideas on an international voluntary organization to assist wounded soldiers would be debated. And so the Dutch readers were informed that this proposition was received, I quote, very favorably and with applause, and that therefore the protagonists of this really humanistic plan could be very satisfied. 2 weeks later, the General Trade Journal made known the erection of the Committee of Five, strangely enough, only naming four of them. Gustave Monnier, of all people, was forgotten. An omission set straight 2 weeks later. Its task was to prepare statutory regulations for an international committee designed to alleviate the sufferings of soldiers if war was to raise its head once more, and to prepare a conference on behalf of this at the end of October, as you, I'm sure, all know. The four intentions of the committee for the conference, such as governmental recognition of the voluntary aid organizations, were mentioned, and the countries who had already pledged they would send representatives. The Netherlands, however, were not amongst them. This would be a sign on the wall. For almost a year, the newspapers went silent again on Dunant and his plans. It was not before August 1864, several newspapers reported that already 15 governments had officially joined the Geneva organization, explicitly calling it Dunant's organization. Amongst them, sadly enough, not the Dutch one. So Basting, who, as Dunant and as nearly all Dutch Red Cross protagonists, was an adherent of the Protestant Réveil movement, set himself to work. In an in memoriam, military health officer Basting was rightly called the founder of the Red Cross branch at his Dutch hometown Bergen-op-Zoom. In the same in memoriam, however, he was also called the one and only founder of the Dutch Red Cross. This hardly can be farther away from the truth. Basting immediately, as we know, was enthusiastic after reading Dunant's and Souvenir de Solferino. He wrote him a letter dripping with Christian faith and Samaritanism. Were he and Dunant not soul brothers, children of Calvin, servants of the Lord? After another protagonist, Lodewijk Mulder, had said he could not find the time, Basting set himself to translating Dunant's work. It soon dawned upon him, not all military health colleagues shared his enthusiasm. He was told his translating work was not supposed to hinder his regular job in whatever way possible. And probably Minister of War Blanken told him Dunant's idea were a regrettable utopia, more probable to hinder the neutrality wished for, by the way, without explaining what in his eyes neutrality encapsulated. After finishing the translation, he also wrote a propaganda booklet, A Call to My Fatherland, the aid organizations for helping the sick and wounded. He hoped it would contribute to the erection of a Dutch Red Cross organization, but he hoped in vain. I quote, "On this terrain, Holland remained dead. I was said to be a stargazer, a philanthropic extremist, and whatever more. So I decided to pull myself away from the matter and try to persuade others to take over my job." As Dunant, he soon was set aside, what became clear already at the 1864 convention meeting. Busting was not delegated, again due to pressure from his own military health colleagues. Apart from an article, another brochure, and his mentioned erection of the Bergen-op-Zoom branch, the role he played in the history of the Dutch Red Cross was over. He had been an important spark, but nevertheless not one leading to fire, but one soon trampled out. Disappointment on 4 years without a known Red Cross society and the impossibility to get the job done by private initiative was great amongst men like Van der Velde, Basting, Mulder, the famous Dr. Pruis van der Hoeve, or his colleague L. H. Verwey, and General W. J. Knoop. Knoop was politically seen a liberal military man, and he was author of the brochure The Geneva Convention of the Geneva Conference 1863. On the request of Dunant, he was appointed ICRC correspondent in 1865, a job he accepted in the assumption that the Dutch organization was soon to come. To speed up the process, he wrote a letter to a couple of people, such as Basting or Mulder, to form a preparatory committee. In this letter, his motives to support Dunant became clear. Humanity was one, well-understood self-interest another. I quote, "Our country, too, can be struck by war. Our brothers and fellow countrymen can also be hit by its misery. Who has a heart for humanity and love for his fatherland has to propagate Dunant's insights." But as Basting, he did not get lucky. Disappointed, a year later, he gave up his attempts and his job as ICRC correspondent. He was followed by physician Verwey, and it was he who got to be successful, although he needed the bypass of a royal decision to reach his goal. On request of the conservative Minister of War, J.A. van den Bos, in 1866, Verwey published the Report on Erecting a Committee to Nurse Sick and Wounded Warriors in Times of War. This report was handed over to the king and the minister, convinced that Dunant's ideas would strengthen the Dutch army at little cost, the Dutch army's fighting capabilities at little cost. He persuaded the king to indeed erect such a committee. The immediate course would be the International Conference and Exhibition on Aid in Wartime at the end of August 1867 in Paris. To avoid the shame of absence, on the 19th of July, Royal Decision No. 60 was signed by William III, at last calling into life the Dutch Society for Lending Aid to Sick and Wounded Warriors in Times of War, whether or not the Netherlands themselves are involved. This whether or not has sadly enough not always been lived up to. That the protagonists, nearly all the Protestant Revival protagonists, is certainly one of the reasons the work of Basting and his friends had failed. The Netherlands were a religiously and ideologically divided country, and for differing reasons, liberals, socialists and Catholics, and non-Reveil Protestants for that matter, were anything but enthusiastic about Dunant's work and his ideas. Some said the Netherlands did not wage war, so why should it be in need of a Red Cross society? Some said one should not alleviate the sufferings of war, but strive for its prevention. And again others took a Nightingale stand, saying that the medical care of soldiers is a state affair and not a job of volunteers, certainly in times when armies no longer consisted of mercenaries, but in which it is the state who calls its inhabitants to arms. Although after July 1867, Protestants remained in front, this deadlock was broken by the royal decision, leaving only part of the liberals, of whom many hated the authoritarian William III, and many socialists skeptic. Nevertheless, the Dutch Red Cross got members from all ideologies, religions, and classes. For instance, Catholic doctor W.J.F. Nuyens embraced the Red Cross idea because he thought war was an inevitable phenomenon, leaving the healing of wounds the only sane medical response. But he also embraced the organization, as he said himself, out of love for our king, our country. Working for the Red Cross, therefore, was a noble nationalist task. Socialist M.W. Scheltema supported the organization for rather different reasons. Contrary to Nuyens, he strove for disarmament and abolishment of standing armies. War preparation did not secure peace, but would only lead to a next war. But if prevention of war would fail, the existence of a Red Cross organization who could take care of the wounded the military health service had to leave aside, could prevent unnecessary suffering within that war. So amongst the members of the Red Cross, no part of society was absent. This can be seen as an advantage of the royal decision, but it had a disadvantage as well. Because the top was appointed by the king and the Ministry of War, that this diversity would be absent in the main board for decades to come. Its members were, excluding a seldom exception, conservative male members of nobility and or military. It has defined the character and decisions until at least after World War II, posing many questions at its neutrality, also, or even especially, in the Dutch colonies. I thank you for your attention.